This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And for those of you who might be thinking, this Skybet Championship's already on hold for the World Cup, and now there are no Skybet League One or Two fixtures either due to the FA Cup. What on earth are they going to talk about? Then fear not, because we're in the presence on this episode of not one, but two Football League legends. The first is a month into his retirement after a 600-game career took him from the non-league to the Premier League.
I've done all right out of football, so basically I ain't really got to rush into anything probably ever. But I literally, I'm obsessed with golf and play golf every single day. I'm desperate to become a pro golfer and things like that.
And the second shares his experiences from his first 2 months as a manager.
I really, really believe from the moment I sat down in my interview and met Dimitri and Robbie and the other directors that we could make it a success together.
On the official EFL podcast. His career started 17 years ago with Rushden & Diamonds. He went on to play for Peterborough United, where he won promotion to the Championship. Middlesbrough, a period he described as being the best in his career. And who could blame him for that? Bournemouth in the Premier League. And over the past 5 years, he's been to Bristol City, Cardiff City, Nottingham Forest, back to Peterborough United, Walsall and Doncaster Rovers. Lee Tomlin finally hung up his boots at the age of 33 a month ago. And I need to slip Brackley Town in there as well on loan, don't I, Lee? Otherwise we'll have their fans. But I thought I'll stick to either the current or former Football League clubs. You must be proud. That's a hell of a roll call of massive clubs.
Yeah, I do look back and I just think, from obviously where I'm from originally and things like that, it is an amazing achievement. And like I said, like, I think my local team, Elston Park, Gary Lineker came from there. So for me, like, I am proud, and I'm really, really chuffed with what I've done in my career. Really, like, I never thought I'd even play in the Football League, and that's just me being honest.
Seriously, so that 17 years ago, I'm trying to do live maths here now. 33 less 17. Is what is that now? You've got me now. Hold on a second. 16, isn't it? So that 16-year-old who made his debut for R&D, you didn't have any sort of major plan in mind to scale the heights?
No. I think, I don't know if that's probably a good thing or bad thing, but I remember as a kid, I was at Leicester City till I was like 9 to 15, got released. And I just thought, okay, like, a boy like me from a council estate shouldn't become a footballer. Like, and I always thought it was too much. And then I went to Rushden & Diamonds, started playing at 16 in League Two. And I was a bit, okay. And then we got relegated first season. But I just thought, no, it doesn't matter what I was doing. I was getting linked with clubs, but I never thought I'd go and play and be able to do anything. I think it took me about 4 years to get out of the Conference, to go to Peterborough.
I don't understand why you're saying a kid from a council estate can't make it as a professional footballer. Is there not a lot of previous as that? Is that conditioning you get through growing up in that environment?
Oh, yeah, don't get wrong. I think that's probably where you do get your best, like, technical players and things like that. But I think, from when I was that young, you probably didn't hear about it as much. No internet and no, do you know what I mean, social media and things like that. But yeah, for now, like, you hear about a lot of it, and I think that's where the best footballers are from. But no, I'm obviously getting a move to Peterborough in League One. I think at the time, Gary Johnson didn't even want to sign me. He said I actually weren't good enough.
Wow.
And it was Darren McCantney, the chairman, that actually said, I signed Lee Tomlin and I'll let you have another player. And he went, okay. And I remember, I think it was Lewin Niatanga came in on loan.
Yeah.
He was at Bristol City at the time. He came to Peterborough on loan. And that was the only reason he signed, because he'd let the manager have one more signing. So it really, again, it wasn't the manager. Just before that, in the Championship, I went on trial for a day to Peterborough. Darren Ferguson said no. There's a lot of stuff that's happened that's not really like been out there. But yeah, a lot of ups and downs. But For me, I'm so proud and of my career. So a lot's happened, and for me to get to the Premier League, I never thought it'd happen, but yeah.
I mean, persistence is the word then I'm kind of thinking of. Persistence and resilience, those two magic words, isn't it? That when you were kicked down, you picked yourself up, used it as motivation to get to the next ledge.
Yeah, probably. Or, but my only biggest regret is probably not believing what I could do. And if I actually put my mind to it and believed, I would have probably looked after myself a lot better. But maybe because I just thought I'd never do it or be able to do it or get to there, I just thought, oh, you know what, I'll just live a normal lifestyle, but being technically a good footballer. That for me is just brutally honest. So I'm happy with everything I've done, but if I look back, yeah, I could have done more. I remember Darren Ferguson saying to me about his dad said like one of the best technical players he's seen, and I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. Justin Edinburgh said to me, he was the manager at Rushden Diamonds, and he said to me, he's like, if you was playing 20 years ago before your time now, when he was at Spurs with Gazza, he said, you are better than Gazza. And I was like, what? And he went, you are better than Gazza. And I was just a bit like, okay, he's just telling me that. And even when I left and he went to Newport and things like that, he still said to me, he's like, I'm telling you the truth. You're technically better than Gazza. You just probably the way you are and the way you look after yourself, you was better. You would have been a lot better back then.
I guess the other compliment you got paid was that Ita Karanka, Middlesbrough manager, I alluded to the fact you've said that was probably your favourite season, reached the playoff final. I would have to agree with you, as I'm a Middlesbrough fan, and I'm prepared to say it outright here and now. The compliment there would be that he saw something in you through the fact that he also wanted you to lose a bit of weight at the time and wanted you to realise your full potential, didn't he?
It was weird. Obviously, when I was at Peterborough, I got sent off three, four times just before I'd signed. So even when I came to Middlesbrough, I think I had to miss about three, four games in the league because I was suspended so many times.
Lee, all right, go on.
But I remember sitting down with Ito. I was so nervous because obviously I know the players he'd played with and who he was and where he'd been and things like that. And I was so nervous, and I don't really get nervous to be fair. And I remember him saying in the room, oh, I'd been to Peterborough United to watch you play. And the first thing I basically said was, no, you ain't. Like, me, just the way I am, just it just came out of, no, you haven't been to Peterborough. Nobody goes to Peterborough.
And have they?
I think so. I think so. I'd never really asked him again. But he was just. He didn't demand you go lose weight, you go do this, you go do that. He was probably totally opposite. It was a bit like, go on, you go do whatever you want to do, but if you're not doing this in training and not doing this, keeping up with the lads and the fitness and this that, you don't play. Which at the other clubs I've been at, yes, you're the best player, but that got me in the, that was. That helped me just, yeah, I'll pick him because he's the best player. But with Karanka, it was, you could be the best player, but if you don't fit my system, fit my style, you don't play. Which I remember once, I was literally having food at the club, and I probably wouldn't eat till the next day. And there's me with breakfast and things like that. Lads are like, have you not ate? I was like, no, not since dinner at 12, 1 o'clock yesterday. I was doing that, and it was quite bad. And I went from about 88 kg to 77.6 in it was about 2 months. And to be fair, it was quite funny because when I went back, well, not back, but back to him managing at Nottingham Forest, he's literally everyone was sat down after training and that. And I remember him and Carlos, the assistant manager at the time, was like, oh, telling all the lads, oh, when Tomo came to Middlesbrough, he was like out of breath, and he was like fat, and he was just laughing and joking. He's like, now look, he's like, you're fit, you're happy, and he just done something for me that he didn't even have to really tell me. I just knew what he expected.
I want to nick a phrase from Casey Stoney, obviously long established England international women's player and has gone off to be very successful as a manager in her own right with Man U in San Diego. She once said to me, she didn't see things as a sacrifice. She saw them as a choice. And it seems to me that that's how Ita Karanka managed you. He didn't sort of demand that you sacrifice. He kind of pushed it your way, Lee, and said, well, these are your options. And if you want to be the best you can be and be in my team, you choose.
Yeah, literally, it was so weird because obviously I think I was about 25, 26 when I went there. And people said, oh, it's finally clicked. And I was like, no, it's not finally clicked. He just had this persona about him. It was just, oh, I've got to do this. I've got to do that. Yes, I could be the best player at Middlesbrough, but that's not going to do it now. Like with your other clubs, yeah, you're the best player, so you get in. That's just probably naturally. But I was always on edge around him, but I just literally loved him.
Somebody once told me he would send scouting reports back if they had a spelling mistake, because he wanted to instill a culture of excellence. Could you see him doing that? Where he was that kind of personality, was he? Pretty OCD?
100%. He was. I remember a lot of the time, Craig Hignett was one of the coaches, and he put like the boxes out, like say if it's 30 by 30. And I promise you, he'd walk around and he'd go, moving the cone off an inch or whatever. He's like, if you've been drinking, and he's just like, what? He's like, I've just put the cones down. He's like, no, they have to be straight. They have to be perfect. And it was just like that. And even like, I remember we lost a game on a Saturday. Next game was a Saturday after that. And it'd be over the other side of the training ground while we're working hard and things like that. And you have a drink and you're just looking over. Going, he's over the other side, got a football, keeping it up, and then he'd knock it down and he'd hit the crossbar. He'd get it again, keep it up, over the other side. He literally, you wouldn't talk to him, but you see him doing this. He's so good. But you get up, but he just wouldn't talk to you. You know his standards. His standards were you had to win.
Wow. I picked out another couple, Eddie Howe, I wanted to mention, because you've already mentioned, obviously, Justin Edinburgh. You've already mentioned Darren Ferguson, Ita. I've picked out Eddie Howe and Neil Warnock as well.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't having you. He was the opposite.
Warnock was strange. I remember the phone call I had from him. I could have signed for Birmingham with Harry Redknapp, but he had Ravel Morrison on trial. And he said, like, right, give me a few weeks. I want to try get his career back on track. And I was a bit like, well, you want him, obviously, instead of me. So I remember Neil Warnock ringing me and he said, like, right, if you don't sign in the next couple of days, I'm going to sign Andy Vyman. So it's you take it or leave it and things like that. He said, you're going to be my next Adel Chirat. You're going to play every game. If you're rubbish on Saturday, you play Tuesday. If you're rubbish on Tuesday, you play Saturday. If you're rubbish on Saturday, you play Tuesday. Or Saturday, he said, you will play every single game of every single minute. And I was like, yeah, I like this. No, like with Warnock, I went and played. I remember my first game for Cardiff in pre-season. We played Plymouth away in pre-season. And I remember coming short to get the ball. I got it, turned. I set Kenneth Zahor up. I think he scored or he missed the chance. And it was a good play. Like I thought, yeah, I feel good. And I remember at half-time, I got absolutely hammered. You do not receive this ball in our half. You stay away from it. Get away. I don't want you touching the ball. Don't want you. So I just felt there and then, I can't do my game. I can't do this. And then I started playing the first few games in the league. I think we was unbeaten, playing really well. But he was just like, no, it's just not for me. And I was just a bit like, you've signed me. You know what I can do.
I'll tell you what, Lee, you're painting a picture of the highs and lows of being a professional footballer for such a long period of time, of the kind of politics in the mix there, how you can be flavour of the month one moment with one personality, another one sees you in a completely different light. I mean, that in itself is a sort of quite deviating map to get through over two decades, isn't it?
It's massive. It's literally, it's so up and down. It's unbelievable. And then obviously, recently with Ronaldo, a lot of people that have not been in football day-to-day basis and things like, I don't see it. So Neil Harris came in, and I remember the chat with him. He was like, Warnock basically said to him, you need to get rid of Lee Tomlin, basically on his first day. And Neil Harris spoke to me, said that, and he went, look, I'm my own man. If you do something wrong to me, then you've done it personally to me. So that's where I'll go from there. I said, to be fair, Gaffer, I was like, I've done nothing wrong with Warnock. I was like, I just don't like the way I play, which is fine. We left it at that. Neil Harris was like, get your body fat down, get this, get that, which, yeah, went and done it. Scored goals for him, got in the playoffs. Got top goal scorer at Cardiff, player of the season at Cardiff. Then I had my operation on my groin. Mick McCarthy comes in. No, go with the 23s.
He just didn't like nothing, no previous?
Nothing whatsoever.
As the last year came along, and obviously Walsall then into Doncaster, did you know that Donny was the last chance corral? Did you start to feel... Did you have doubts about yourself, or when the end comes, does it come quicker than you're expecting?
I just felt it was, for what I'd done for the, how many years, at least over 11, 12 years in the Championship and things like that, League One Championship, Premier League or whatever, I just think like nobody cared. Like, it doesn't matter what you'd done the season before or two seasons before, nobody actually cares. It's quite sad to think that. I think once you reach an age of 30, 31, that is it. They'd rather bring a young lad who's 20 years old or 18 years old, put him on the bench a few times, and if he has a few good games, you could go and sell him for 5, 10 million. And that's what I don't like, but I know it's gone more of a business. I'm not stupid. So it just became one of those. And I just found like the love. I started to get back at Doncaster pre-season. I went there just to get fit and keep fit. But I actually enjoyed it a lot. But then it's like the game Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. You have very rarely days off. And
Lee, if I might, I mean, I did read some of your comments at the time because you've been out. As I said, when I introduced you about a month now, I was a bit distressed to hear about the sort of pain that you found yourself in. That is the legacy from the work you've put in over those 17 years, is you have residual pain. Or is the stuff that is going to be with you for the rest of your life?
Well, that's the thing. When I was at Cardiff, I was actually playing, after lockdown, I was playing with my groin tendon off the bone, even though it's probably... the best football I've ever played, like for goals and assists. I'm scoring every game or setting a goal up every game. We got into the playoffs, and then I done my hamstring, so that's repair. Then I had my groin operation, but also my hip needed an operation. Needed to be out for a year. So Cardiff was a bit like, no, don't get it done. Don't get it done. Like, you'll be fine. We'll manage it. So I always thought, okay, no problem. Even with Mick McCarthy there, they were like, no, he's going to get you back in. You're the best player. You can do this. You can do that. So I always believed the physios as well as myself, because I thought, yeah, all the lads were like, you've got to play. Like, you're the best player. You're top goal scorer. Best player of the season for us. And so you just think, yeah, yeah. But just the manager. So I didn't have the operation. And then I always thought, if I'm not having it, then I'm always going to be in pain. But yeah, waking up, and the amount of painkillers I take every day was unbelievable. And even as soon as I get in the car as well, leaving training, I'm like painkillers. It was bad. But I tried to hide it. I just felt like it was becoming a normal thing. Even the gaffer, Gary McSheffrey, said to me, he's like, you're moving well, you're running well, you look good. And I was like, nah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds diabolical, and this again is another side. You've given us so many instances of stuff that fans just have no indication of. They just might take stuff on face value, and there's the reality. Are you anxious about the future, about the loss of structure, or are you in that phase of excitement where actually you've got a bit of freedom for the first time in ages and you can go and explore and enjoy yourself for a short while? Or as long as you like, actually. I don't know why I said short while. It's your life. You can do whatever you want.
I've done all right out of football, so basically I ain't really got to rush into anything probably ever. But I'm obsessed with golf and play golf every single day. I'm desperate to become a pro golfer and things like that. But
okay. Are you decent?
Yeah, I play like Woburn and things like that. So they're like the professional courses. I'm shooting like one over and three over. So if I can get that consistency, I'm about 6-7 shots off of turning pro and becoming very good. So, and that's only within the last month or two of getting back into it.
Well, we'll watch that with interest. I want to finish on a high. Here we go. It's your quick fire round. I'm going to put you on the spot. Favorite ground?
Wembley. I'll go Old Trafford because of the playoff final for Peterborough.
2011 beat Huddersfield 3-0, but there was something on at Wembley. There was a Champions League final, so you had to play at Old Trafford. Okay, well, I'll take that from you. Favourite supporters? Not wanting to influence you in any way, but...
I've always said to many people, like the North East fans, I know it's not good for Middlesbrough fans to hear it, but Middlesbrough, Sunderland, Newcastle, I actually think are the best. They are proper, proper fans. Middlesbrough was unbelievable. I loved it.
Stop there. That was the right answer. Any regrets? And actually, I haven't asked you about those 11 red cards either, have I, and stuff. I don't know whether you regret any of those or that. I don't know what the hell happened in August with Donny in those mad 30 seconds. But regrets. Is there one thing you think, I wish I hadn't done that?
My biggest regret was probably not sticking around and listening to Eddie Howe enough. Yeah, I'd say that's my biggest regret because it was the Premier League. Yeah. But I went to Bournemouth, started playing with Callum Wilson. Then Callum Wilson done his ACL, I think he done, against Stoke away. And then after that, Eddie Howe basically just said, like, I don't see you playing with anyone else, so you're not going to play this season because Callum Wilson was out. And I was a bit, he's out for 8 months. So that is literally the whole season. And the training was so hard. It was unbelievable. Like the hardest thing anyone will ever go through every day in football.
Which bit of listening to Eddie do you wish you'd done?
It's hard to say when you're in it, but miss basically a full season. Work hard, train hard for that whole season. Why Callum was out for 8 months, 9 months, whatever it was. And I think he would have respected me a lot more. And I think I would have been there for him and played a hell of a lot more in the Premier League for him, and obviously for myself. So that's probably my biggest regret because his coaching is unbelievable. I actually think he's probably one of the best coaches in the world. He must be.
Well, as he's proven with the heights he's scaling with Newcastle at the moment, which is not just down to money, by the way. It's a matter of how he's improved all those players, even if they've cost fortunes in the first place. I need your favourite goal of all time. Remind us of your absolute favourite goal.
I love the one for Bristol City, last game of the season against Huddersfield. It came to me at the edge of the box, and only because as well, my mate Dean Whitehead was playing for Huddersfield, and it came to me and I thought, like, flicked it over his head from the edge of the box, wrapped it half volley with my left foot. It went in the top corner near post. I think we won like 3-0 or something like that. And I remember after the game and things like that, he'd rang me or text me. No, he rang me and he was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, it just reminded me back in training, like flicking it over his head and making him look stupid. I was like, I don't know why it came to me in a game. I think it was just like taking the mic, really. Like, we'd absolutely battered up. But yeah, that was a good goal.
I love it. And finally, I'm going to give you one moment from those 17 years. It's the picture you would have on your bedside table or on your above your fireplace or whatever. One moment and one moment only. No, oh, I could have this one, that one. You've got to pick one. What's it going to be?
No, there's two.
No, it's one. You've got to pick.
Yeah, but it's for me personally.
Go on, tell me about the two. Tell me about the two then. Go on.
The biggest one, obviously, for Middlesbrough is the company Turner against Man City beating Man City.
Of course, FA Cup.
But for me personally, like, making my debut against Liverpool at Anfield, wow. Like, that's my dream. That is literally, and then the game after, starting against Leicester, which is my hometown team and things like that, like, they are, you couldn't write it any better for me personally.
Okay. So that's Middlesbrough, but you hinted there was another one there as well.
Yeah. The Premier League's got to be it.
Reaching the Premier League.
Yeah, that is it. My debut in the Premier League. Just, I'd never dreamed of, and like I said, I probably just didn't dream big enough, because I always just thought, like I said, a council estate boy ain't going to be able to play against the likes of Vince and company and Aguero and Silva and Sanchez, Ozil. Like, I'm sorry, but I just didn't. But I wish I did.
Listen, whatever the future holds, good luck. We'll keep an eye on your golf with progress. And if you're stuck on a wet afternoon and you want to have another further chat, you're always welcome on the official EFL podcast.
Oh, anytime, seriously. I appreciate that.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tate.
I'm going to be honest. I thought our next guest was more sensible than he's proved himself to be. Although when he joined us on the official EFL podcast earlier this year, after announcing his retirement following 557 appearances for Wycombe Wanderers, we did wish him luck with his next chapter. That came at the end of September when he left his coaching role at Wycombe and ended his 19-year association with them to become head coach of League Two strugglers Colchester United, their seventh appointment in 8 years. And I'm looking at you, Matt, and actually remarkably, in the 2 months since, no more grey hairs. You're about as you were. Have you lost weight, actually? Are you a little bit skinnier?
I have lost weight, yeah. I have lost weight.
As a result of the job or as a result of some diet transformation?
Well, it's not been a diet, so it must be something else. Life's been quite busy, Clem, and not enough time for the gym, not enough time to be eating properly, obviously, if I'm losing weight. But it's been a brilliant, I think, 7.5 weeks now, nearly 2 months. I've absolutely loved every moment of it. It's been challenging, it's been rewarding, it's been all of the emotions already in the 7.5 weeks, but I can't say that I've regretted one moment of it. It's been just what I've wanted to do for many years now. I've been preparing for a long time. I knew when I had to hang up the boots, I wanted to stay in the game and continue coaching and move into a head coach or management role if I could. And I feel extremely fortunate to have had that opportunity at Colchester in the last 2 months, and I'm loving every moment.
It was an itch that just had to be scratched. This has been, this is the start of your coaching management journey, but the preparation has, as you say, been going on for several years now.
You're exactly right. Yeah, I've described it a few times that it was an itch that I had to scratch. I obviously loved my life and my career at Wycombe Wanderers. I was extremely fortunate that Gareth and Richard gave me an opportunity to join their coaching staff, and I was loving that and didn't want to leave. But at the same time, it was an itch that I had to scratch. When the opportunity came to interview for the job at Colchester United, it just felt right. And once I went for the interview and met the chairman and the board, it felt, you know, even more that it was an opportunity I really, really wanted to take. And so I was absolutely delighted to be offered the chance to take the job. And like I say, it was definitely something I was missing the responsibility after being captain and out on the pitch for so many years. You know, I was loving my job as a first team coach, but I was really missing the responsibility day to day of what a captain or a head coach role looks like. And so I was definitely looking for something to step into. And like I say, when this opportunity came around, it seemed to tick every box.
Wow, I've never, and as you will know from the wrinkles on my head and definite lack of hair as opposed to grey hairs, I have never heard anybody say that to me before. So you're a, well, what would you describe yourself as? And obviously there was a short list of 10. The club have been very public about this. They interviewed 5. So how did you sell yourself? What did you say the club were getting? And if we could address that issue as well of the need for responsibility, nurturing, caring for, shaping, leading over the barricades as well, that would be that would save me another question, quite frankly, Matt.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to be as honest as I could in my interview. It's the first time I'd interviewed for a job, so I didn't really know what to expect in terms of a head coach role. So I went with the thought process of just trying to present me as honestly as I could of how I saw life, how I saw football, how I saw culture and environment, how I saw my background in terms of coming through the system at Ipswich, of giving young footballers a chance, and getting to work with so many young footballers over the years at Wycombe Wanderers, trying to help them both on and off the pitch. I have a huge belief in better people make better footballers, and how I saw that process at working, you know, if I was lucky enough to have this opportunity. And that's kind of what I went with. I know a great deal about Colchester United over the years because of my family home being in Suffolk. So I had a good knowledge base of the football club already. So I tried to present me first and foremost, the football club, how I felt like my beliefs and core values could align with the football club, and went along those lines. And that is that. And sorry, there was a second question involved in the first one.
Well, it was just your need for responsibility, your need to lead, to nurture, to hold that responsibility that I guess as a first team coach, you've kind of got it, but you're being shaped by the two in front of you in the pecking order.
Yeah, it's exactly that. I didn't realise I was going to miss that responsibility as much as I did when I stopped playing. You know, I loved my career. I loved leading from the front in the latter years, especially when I was captain and club captain, and the success that we had in those years. And when I was first in coach, you know, genuinely I loved the role. I loved helping the boys and trying to develop, especially sort of individuals, one-on-ones. That was the main bulk of my work. But I did miss the responsibility of the winning, the losing. And of course, it still felt those feelings strongly as being first in coach, but it wasn't the same. And I needed to be at the front. I wanted to make the decisions. I wanted to be accountable. I wanted to help as much as I possibly can. You know, I've worked with sports psychologists and mindset coaches over the years, and I've kind of given myself a little bit of context of why I feel the need for the responsibility, why I feel the need to try and help people as much as I possibly do. And those feelings that I get from helping and trying to nurture an environment are far more rewarding than I ever got from playing, which I never thought I'd ever say that during my career. You knew how desperate I was to continue as long as I could. But one thing I've realised in the recent past is that this job is far more rewarding than playing ever was.
Wow, you've got that already. That already clicks with you.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, I didn't think it would. I wasn't sure whether it would when I finished playing. I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to fill that void. I was worried that it was always going to be something that was missing in my life. But, you know, I soon realised within coaching that seeing players fulfil themselves and go and get results, trying to, and moving into this job, you know, trying to create a culture and identity, being able to mould a football club to the way I really feel that I want to see it, is something that, you know, I can't, you know, I don't stop thinking about it day and night. It's something that consumes me 24 hours a day. It really does, hence probably why you're commenting on my weight. But it is what it is, Clem. You know, this job is everything I hoped it would be and more. You know, I don't think you could ever maybe imagine what it would be like to be a head coach or a manager. You try and put yourself in that situation, but like I say, it's been everything I hoped for and more.
Yeah, but you've got a lovely family set up, and I know you cherish your missus and your kids immensely. I interviewed Thomas Frank quite recently for the BBC's Football Focus, and he was telling me that switch-off process means that he's never really in the room and him and his wife can be out for dinner with friends, and and he'll feel the hand on his knee under the table, and Mrs. Frank will be squeezing him, going, come on, concentrate on what our friends are saying. I mean, how do you marry those two up? Because your kids are at a precious age. They won't be at that age forever. So how do you give them time? How do you not let it seep into the family dynamic?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, my wife was talking to me the other evening about something, and all I was thinking about was a formation for the game the next night and what we were playing against.
You don't know what she's talking to you about to this day. If she listens to this, you're deeply in the doo-doo.
I was already in it because she said I thought she was talking about the girls swimming and she was talking about something else, and I tried to answer it, and I was completely wrong because I was out of the room, and it was a lesson to me. I felt awful, but it was, you know, it's something that I need to make sure I get the balance. It's really important. I love my wife. I love my children more than anything. They're the most important thing in my life, and my work comes secondary to that. But I also know that if you want anything strongly enough in life, you have to be willing to make sacrifices along the way. And you know, your first opportunity in management or as a head coach is your most important opportunity, because you have to make sure it goes well. You know, so I won't be stopping at anything to make sure this is a success. There's obviously going to be hurdles along the way. It's my first opportunity. I know that there's thoughts outside of people who know me who may think it whatever, but that's fine. It's fuel for the fire for me. I know that what I've got, I know the team around me. I know I've got people to lean on to ask advice as and when. So I'm in no doubt of where we're going to take this football club, and it fills me with excitement and energy and enthusiasm, Clem. The journey is the most exciting part, isn't it? You know, we all want to get to the end goal, but we can't rush it. The journey is the exciting bit of where we take this football club, and I'm so proud to be a part of it.
Well, it is, so long as all people are aligned. And obviously you've had that. You've definitely had a little increase in the points return over your league games in charge compared to before you came, but I mentioned the stats of the amount of predecessors that you do have. So that journey, as you say, that taking the club from struggle and the regimes of constantly chopping and changing to maybe a bit more stability and forward momentum, etc. Your owner Robbie Cowling's got to be aligned. You've got a sporting director as well, haven't you, Dimitri Halaiko? So I mean, if you're not getting the results, how's everybody aligned? Because human nature would say your owner's going to be going, blooming heck, I don't want to be in the National League next season. You know, so how does it all match up?
None of us want to be in the National League. And of course, not the owner. The owner doesn't. The sporting director doesn't. I'm not foolish or naive enough to think that I'm not judged on results. Of course I am. So I think it's about getting the balance right. We want to pick up short-term results, and we want to set ourselves short and medium-term goals to align the football club. And I'm fully aware that if I don't get results in the short term, there's no point thinking and dreaming about the medium or long term. I'm not naive or silly enough to not know that, Clem. In the short term, we have to pick up results. We have to find a winning formula. We have to make sure that this football club retains its league status. And if we can do that, we have big beliefs that we can move it forward. But of course, it's about results. Football's about results. You know, the world demands that you get results instantly. And I'm not silly enough to think anything aside from that. But we believe that we can do that. And we can also believe we can move it forward.
Have you at any point thought about the risk? You know what the stats are for first-time managers. 50% of them, if they lose their jobs, never return, they never get another job. Have you even thought about that? Or have you got a veneer, a Teflon on there?
I thought about that when I was a coach. I thought that it's a risk to take that opportunity. And when I was playing, I thought, wow, management sounds scary. But as soon as the opportunity arose to interview for this job, I've not given it another thought. I'd rather give something a go and perceive to fail than sit in a comfort zone and never, you know, experience life, Clem. So I'm fully aware of the risk. I'm fully aware of the stats. They don't scare me. They just inspire me to try and buck the trend and try and make a success of what I'm trying to do.
I'm buying into it, mate. I mean, if I wasn't such a lumbering fool, I'd follow you over those barricades. I tell you, I guess as well, you know, the club does have previous in nurturing somebody like a Phil Parkinson, who's gone on to, well, he's had various promotions with various clubs, hasn't he? But, you know, it obviously would share the values of wanting stability and not be chopping and changing.
Of course, I really believe in the chairman. I really believe in Robbie, what he's trying to do with his football club. I really believe in Dimitri, who I work extremely close with. I really feel like our values are aligned. I feel like our vision for the football club is aligned, and I wouldn't have taken this opportunity. You know, I wasn't willing to just jump into something if I thought it was doomed for failure. Certainly not, because the stats that you gave me before about first opportunities, you have to make it a success. And I really, really believe from the moment I sat down in my interview and met Dimitri and Robbie and the other directors that we could make it a success together. I haven't delved too much into previous management or anything. This is me. You can only worry about the present. I can only be me. I can't worry about what kind of manager everyone else thought I should be or what I can be. All I'm concerned about is trying to be me every day, trying to build the best environment for the players to go and excel, trying to have a structure and a strategy around the team that allows them to go and win football matches. And on top of that, trying to, you know, get every last drop out of the experienced boys, because I know how much I loved the twilight years of my career, and I know how much those guys can cherish those, but also try and provide an environment that we help young players, to really increase their knowledge, increase their technical, tactical skills, and try and move them on to have really big careers, because I know that some of the boys that I worked with at Wickham that went on to have a really good careers, I've found that even to this day, I see them do well, and it gives you a real good feeling. So that's me.
Have you had any moments where there's been a situation, Matt, and you've gone, yeah, fine. Oh, blimey, I've got to make a decision about this because your name is now on the door and Gaz is not going to do it anymore. Has there been anything like that?
Do you know what, Clem? It's you don't have to think about making decisions. They come at you, you know, all day, every day.
Give me a couple of hours in a typical day of the sort of stuff that's coming your way. Seriously.
No, of course it's, you know, the amount of games we've had since I've been in the job. It's constantly picking formations, picking teams, you know, speaking to other people around the club and making decisions on schedules, on timings, on travelling schedules. You know. Everything. Then you get home and my wife wants answers on X, Y, and Z, and you've already made a million that day already. So it's fun. It's what I've wanted to claim. Without going back to our earlier conversation, it's the responsibility I've been craving. I love people looking at me for answers, people looking at me for inspiration, people wanting my time. I think it's brilliant. I've always wanted to do it, and I'm so glad. But it's a constant source of decision making.
Yeah, this is a tough question because with it, it could be implied criticism of predecessors. But what changes have you made straight away? What things have you implemented where you saw a gap? And criticism of the past people is not intended there. I don't want to put you in a difficult position. But if you decided it needed introducing, then you obviously saw there was a gap there as to why it needed introducing.
Yeah, of course. One thing I'm certainly not going to do is criticize anything that's gone on in the past. I have full respect. Anyone who is willing to sit in the seat that I'm currently sitting in, I have the utmost respect for, because I know how much it takes over your life. I know how much you have to put into it to win any game of football. It's an incredible amount you have to put in. So without going into too much detail, Clem, I've just tried to come in the building and be me. I know that over the last couple of years, results have gone against the football club. So I've just tried to come in, be me, be positive, try and look for solutions always. There's never any problems. There's only solutions, Clem. And that's the way I've attacked the situation. Of course, I understand that, you know, there has been defeats along the way in the last couple of years. And I understand that it's not going to change overnight. I'm fully aware of where we're at, but I have a huge belief in what we're trying to create and what we're trying to do moving forward. My assistant, Richard Thomas, is an absolute elite coach. I'm extremely lucky to have been able to appoint Richard. He is unbelievable on the grass. The goalie coach, Lee Harrison, who I was lucky enough to follow me from Wickham Wanderers, I would trust with my life. He's incredible with the goalies, but he's got so much experience and people skills around the leagues that we're currently playing in and the one above. So I've surrounded myself with really, really good people. There's great people at the club already. Like I've said earlier on, the board have been really supportive, and Robbie, the chairman, couldn't have been any more supportive so far. He sees what we're trying to do, and he understands, and he's right behind, moving this club forward, and he's backing it. So, of course, there's been tough moments along the way. Defeats are harder to take as a manager than they were as a player. Although I used to take them pretty badly as a player, because you feel responsible.
Do you blame yourself?
Of course, you question everything. I question everything I do constantly. The only way of growth is to question. I don't want to be closed-minded and think I'm perfect. I'm far from it, Clem. I've got loads to learn. I totally understand that. But I've got a phone full of contacts to lean on when I need. I've got Harry with, Lee Harrison with his experience to lean on, and Richard as well. So, I'm far from perfect, mate. I've got loads to learning to do, and I analyse myself every single day. We have a way that we do it, me and the coaching staff. We analyse every day, good bits, bad bits, how we're going to improve. And that's the only way we're going to get better, mate.
You haven't been in League Two for a few years now. I mean, I've got the table in front of me here now. At the top, Leighton Orient, 14 wins already. That's the same as they got in the whole of last season. 18,500 at Bradford at the weekend. Not that they can win at home. They haven't done it for a couple of months. At the other end of the scale, one of the teams you're up against, Gillingham, picking up a point after four consecutive defeats. What are your overall impressions of the division? Whole different host of sizes of clubs, objectives, different types of managers, different types of playing styles?
Totally. I guess the last few years I've been involved in League One, but I spent a large bulk of my career in League Two, so I knew what to expect, Clem. I know what a winning team looks like at this level. I know what a winning environment looks like at this level, which gave me a massive head start, I believe, in coming to be a head coach at this league. You've got some big clubs, like, say, Bradford. Leighton Orient are absolutely flying at the moment. They've got some really, really good players. But there is a gap between League One and League Two. And I believe that this club's capable of competing at this level. I really, really believe that. And I think that the backing is there. The vision is there to move it forward. And that's what really gets the energy going.
Yeah. I'm curious as well, as being at the forefront in the technical area, because I noticed you played Stevenage during your first games in charge. So you're up against the Gruffalo, aren't you? The angry man himself in Mr. Evans. There must be others who have a far more laid back style. Have you stayed in your groove, or do you adapt depending on who you're up against? As in whether to shout things back at them or rub up against them, or whether to stay in the opposite corner?
I think if you concern yourself with too much what's going on alongside you, you're taking your eye off the game in front. I try and concentrate on the game as much as I possibly can. Obviously, it's an emotional game. You want to win. I hate conceding. I hate losing. So you have to keep those emotions in check. I feel like my main responsibility on a match day is to try and analyse what's going on in front of my eyes, trying to see the game as clearly as I can. Discuss what's happening with Richard, my assistant, Tomo, and make decisions that we feel right is at the time. Of course, we're not going to get all of those decisions right, but we believe that we, as long as we can see the game clearly, then we can make the right decisions at the time. But, I've utmost respect for Steve and the job he's done at Stevenage, and the other managers I've come across so far. Like I say, anyone who's willing to put themselves in these shoes and have a go in football management, I have the utmost respect for. So it's all about us. We can't get too involved in what's
going on. You've got all cautious on me. You're being cautious. It wasn't meant to be a loaded question to rile anybody, but it was just the fact that, I guess you're having to be that little bit more careful now to make sure you don't provide the team talk for when you rub shoulders again in a few months' time, are you?
Hence why I was very cautious with your question.
Yes. What an expert. You can tell you've done some good media and communications training over the years. I should remind everybody, and I did say at the start of this week's official EFL podcast, obviously no EFL fixtures whatsoever this coming weekend in League Two and League One, set to return on the 2nd of December. A lot of games have been switched because if England were to finish runners-up in their World Cup group, their last 16 game could be at 3 o'clock on the Saturday. Alternatively, if they were to win their group, it would be on the Sunday. I'm being extremely cautious there because my own handwriting suggests I've got my groups A and B muddled up, but I know for a fact what I've said is right. Do you mind if I just ask you, just obviously you keep in touch with Gaz, I'm sure, in comparison to what the seasons that the club's had quite recently, just what, struggling for a reset at the moment, do you think, Wickham, mid-table in League One?
I think Gaz has overachieved in every season that he's been manager of Wickham Wanderers. You know, getting promoted from League Two, given the budget that we had at that point, should never have happened. Getting promoted from League One, given the budget at that point, should not have happened in a million years. You know, and even we nearly stayed up in the Championship. Having a right old go last year and getting to the playoff final was an overachievement again. So I'm so proud of the job he's doing there. I think he's done an incredible job over a number of years. And the lads I'm still so close with, I speak to them, you know, quite a lot of them regularly. I'm still willing them to do well, but I must admit, Clem, I've not really seen any of their goals, any of their highlights, because my own world
You said we about 90 seconds ago, just momentarily.
When I was there and we
okay,
got promoted,
past
that
tense,
was the we.
Past
that was the
tense.
We. You're trying to stitch me up as well here, Clem.
I'm not trying to stitch you up at all.
Nah, but look, I'm proud of the job they're doing there. Like I say, unfortunately, I don't really have too much energy to focus on anything else apart from Colchester United at the moment.
Okay. In which case, my next few questions might fall on stony ground, but obviously World Cup underway. How did you handle, obviously, England's first group game was a 1 o'clock kickoff on a Monday afternoon. How did you handle that? Did you watch it as a squad? Did you organise the training session to make sure every body could be back home in plenty of time to watch it at home? What did you do?
We put it on in the canteen. We trained at 11 o'clock, so we were finished at 12:30, lunch, and we had it on in a big TV in the screen in the canteen while people were eating their lunch, and people were welcome to stay and watch, as many did, and others sort of watched a little bit. I watched the first half whilst I was eating my lunch and saw a couple of goals. My mind was elsewhere, so I cut it at halftime and went and carried on with work.
I do want to ask you, though, about an incident in the game, which was the Iranian goalkeeper. It took ages to substitute him. Now, as somebody that had to retire as a result of a concussion suffered when the ball hit you as you were stepping back off, I think it was for an opposition free kick, what do you make of that? I mean, surely the medical authorities should have stepped in straight away and got him off, shouldn't they?
Yeah, we was having our lunch. I was watching it. The TV was on, and I couldn't believe what was going on before my eyes, Clem. I was getting angry about it. No player should be allowed to carry on in that circumstance. He shouldn't have been given an option. There should be, on a stage like that, there should be an independent doctor who can make an unemotional decision about the player's welfare, because you can't tell me that the player's welfare was put at the forefront of that decision to allow him to, you know, it doesn't take a very educated medical expert to look at that situation and see that he was clearly dazed. He'd taken a massive blow to the head. There was no way they could say that he was safe to carry on. And I thought it was terrible, Clem, that he was allowed to stay on. It was obvious what was going to happen. And I thought it was disgusting. That shouldn't be allowed on a Sunday league game. It shouldn't be allowed in the Football League. And certainly with the amount of money that's been put into something like a World Cup, it should never be allowed to happen. I thought it was a disgrace.
Just while we're on the subject of England, do want to send our condolences and love to the family of the former England striker David Johnson. He was the first man to score for both Liverpool and Everton in the Merseyside derby. He's passed away at the age of 71. 6 goals in 8 appearances back in the day for England. Probably best remembered for his 6 years at Anfield from 1976. He went on to win 3 league titles and the European Cup in 1981. Finally, on the subject of English coaches, I just thought it was very nice to see in the World Cup. We've got John Herdman, Northeasterner, is the manager of Canada, unorthodox career path. I think he took a job in New Zealand with their women's team, moved to the Canadian women's team, has come across to help them. Well, he's led them to qualification, Canada, the men's team. We've got Anthony Barry, who, if people don't know his story, was first team coach at Wigan when they went into administration. He ended up on the same coaching course as Frank Lampard, who took him to Chelsea. He ended up in the Ireland camp as well as the Chelsea job. Tuchel's kept him on. Potter's kept him on. He's now alongside Robbie Martinez and Thierry Henry in the Belgian setup. And Anthony Hudson as well, who is the son of Alan Hudson, the former Chelsea legend, played for England as well. He's part of the USA setup. So I'm bringing this full circle. There were different options to make your way in the world of football, but it was always going to be domestic, get going in the EFL for you, was it, Matt?
Yeah, it's where I've lived my life over the last 19 years at Wycombe Wanderers in the EFL. I love everything about competitive football. I love everything about the EFL and what goes into a long season. It's where I feel comfortable, Clem, and it was the only route that seemed to fit for me. It was the right step for me at the right time in my life. Like I say, I'm hell-bent on making it work, mate.
Those stories are good, though, aren't they?
They're amazing.
There are other ways, you know?
Of course, yeah. And, you know, there's not one path for everyone. Everyone's journey into coaching or journey in life, it looks different, and we can never predict the future. I know that I've heard a lot of good things from a couple of Irish lads I know about Anthony Barry. Apparently, he's an exceptional coach. It's good to have a nice English presence at the World Cup.
It certainly is. If you're coming back to join us at the end of the season, are you absolutely confident you can keep Colchester in the EFL? We don't want them dropping out again, do we?
No, I'm absolutely confident. I've got huge belief in the football club. I've got huge belief in the players, in the squad that we've got, and with my staff that I've been extremely lucky to appoint. So, massive belief in that. No doubt of where we're going, Clem, and I'm just really enjoying the journey.
Yeah. Oh well. Listen. Keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep chipping away. Just eat a little bit more food, will you? Because I don't want you wasting away any more there. You're just looking. You're putting me to shame. I can see you. We have a little Zoom link connected, and you're putting me to shame with my pudgy cheeks. Great to talk to you, mate. Thanks for joining us.
Lovely to see you. Take care, Clem. Speak soon. Bye, mate.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Matt Bloomfield and to Lee Tomlin. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.